Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Mike Eckel, filling in for our regular host, Steve Gutterman. And joining me now is my esteemed colleague, one of the hardest working reporters in the building, Mark Krutov of RFERL's Russian service. Zdarova, Mark. Thanks for coming on today.
Hi, Mike.
So last week was arguably one of the more momentous political weeks in modern Russian history, one of the more significant ones in Vladimir Putin's 20 years as president or the country's preeminent leader. I've even heard the words watershed, tectonic, tipping point bandied about. I'm talking, of course, about the events surrounding Alexei Navalny, which culminated in a judge ordering him to prison for about 3 years and thus resulted in massive nationwide protests before his court appearance and after. So let's recap briefly. Navalny was traveling in Siberia in August, promoting an effort aimed at eroding the political dominance of the Kremlin-allied United Russia Party. He fell suddenly ill, nearly died, was medevaced to Germany, where medics found that he had been poisoned with a powerful nerve agent that in all likelihood was used by Russian security agents against him. Navalny spent 5 months recuperating. During that time, Russian officials signaled that they were prepared to go after him legally for trumped-up charges of violating parole from an earlier trumped-up criminal case. Navalny, of course, was defiant. He flew into Moscow on January 17th. He was arrested. His allies called for two successive weekends of protests nationwide. That happened, and they were big. His allies also dropped a bombshell investigation implicating Putin, allegedly, in massive corruption and ownership of an opulent Black Sea palace. About 2 weeks after his arrival in Russia, the judge ordered Navalny to prison. Protesters took to the streets, mainly in Moscow, and they were met with a brutal police response. So the question for Mark is, what's going on? Do you think we are at a watershed moment in Putin's presidency?
My answer may disappoint our listeners or you, Mike. I don't know, but I don't think we are there. This wave of protests, I think, shouldn't be neither over nor underestimated. Yes, the number of people that showed up was, I would say, record or near to the record if we speak about unauthorized protests, which happened all over the Russia during last decade or so. There were also unprecedentedly widespread nationwide across Russian cities all over the country. But at the same time, we can remember, for example, July 2013, when people came out to the streets in Moscow after Navalny have been brought to jail after the sentence on Kirovlev's case. And that decision have been flipped right while these protests continued in the center of Moscow in the late evening, an absolutely unusual time for such a decision, like 10 p.m. And it all happened in one day. It was clear for everybody that Kremlin flipped this decision to jail Navalny under the pressure of these protests. So what we see now is, as you can see too, rather different. Kremlin is not going to retreat and is ready to retaliate on its highest gear. On the other hand, sociology shows that nearly half of protesters in Moscow, for example, this time were newcomers. Some of them were impressed by the Putin's palace story, which you mentioned, though this story, I should remind our listeners, is like 10 years old. New generation might have not been fully aware of it, I don't know. Some of these newcomers don't support Navalny. It's very important, but use this possibility to show their disagreement with the government. Both groups were met with unprecedented brutality. Protests were stopped by Navalny's comrades, after all, and Navalny not only haven't been released this time, but is facing much more severe sentence on another upcoming criminal case on money fraud. Prosecutors claim he wrongly spent the money which have been donated to his team by his supporters. So to sum things up, it may look as Putin's watershed moment for those who didn't follow closely events in Russia for last decades, but I think their outcome was rather not great, not terrible, both for Putin and protesters.
So let's move away from the legal questions here to some of the political, I guess, infighting questions. Late last week and over the weekend, there were a couple of interesting developments. A top aide to Navalny said publicly that there would be no more street protests for now, possibly until the spring or until warmer weather. That was viewed in a couple different ways, possibly as a way to refocus Russians' attention on the upcoming Duma parliamentary election scheduled for the fall. And then Grigory Yavlinsky, everyone remember him? He's been the old guard leader of the liberal political party Yabloko for decades. He's also been kind of marginalized in the Duma for various reasons. Over the weekend, he came out publicly criticizing Navalny for Navalny's well-known nationalist views. And to be sure, some have even called Navalny's views borderline racist, a separate story altogether. But Yavlinsky also came out and rejected Navalny's populist messaging, and he called the street protests ineffective and counterproductive. What's going on there? What do you make of that?
Volkov's announcement really left a lot of people pissed off, especially because, as I said earlier, there were many neophytes on the streets this time, newcomers. And it will also, I think, be used by Kremlin to show any potential new protesters that they will be, let's say, betrayed by their leaders, though I personally don't agree with such a definition. Do they have to blame Volkov? I don't think so. Such a number of protesters didn't have much chances about a hugely improved Russian police repressive machine. It was a nice try for Navalny's associates, but though I think it was a lose-lose situation. If they asked people to show up again last weekend, turnout would shrink because all active leaders and protesters were already imprisoned for short terms, but still. And the price that you have to pay for turning out have been significantly raised by Kremlin. And yes, the weather too. Focusing on Duma elections, smart voting technology have been criticized largely, even by Navalny's supporters. It was fine as a one-off thing, I think, but it's not fine as a long-term strategy. Government would just stop any candidates who are not under their full control from being registered for elections, for example. Or they will bring out some candidates who will say something about, like, we shall detain Navalny forever, or we should kill him, he should have been poisoned, so how you will vote for him only because he is not from United Russia Party? I don't think so. So smart voting would be annoying for authorities, I think this year too, especially in Russian regions. But in general, this strategy is not suitable for flipping the situation, I think. And finally, Yavlinsky, that's the most funny thing for me personally. He's been on Kremlin's roster for several years, and people just don't remember previous takes like this one. He's doing everything government wants just to keep his party receiving those 3% on Duma elections, which do not allow him to have some members of his party in State Duma, but they do allow, according to Russian law, they do allow him to receive government funding. All parties which gather more than 3% on general elections, they receive this funding. And yes, I think Yavlinsky, yet we should remember that Yavlinsky is not formal head of the party, of his party, already for several years, but de facto he is. We didn't hear much opposition to his words from formal leaders, Sergei Mitrokhin, for example, or somebody else. I think this time his statement received so much attention, public attention, because he touched not Navalny's nationalism or something, but he touched Navalny's poisoning case in the most embarrassing way one could expect from liberal politicians, saying that it's a game that Western countries play around this. It's like it have been written for him in Kremlin and just downloaded into his head. So that's the reason, I think, why his statement is being discussed so widely now.
So let's flip it a little bit and perhaps be a little bit more speculative on what the takeaway from the Kremlin side of things. It's pretty clear they're taking a very hard line with Navalny. The police presence on the streets of Moscow was very clear. The messaging coming out is that, yeah, we don't care. We're just going to take the hardest line possible right now, and we're going to call Navalny a foreign agent. He's under the funding of the CIA or MI6. But one of the things that's interesting about what's driving Navalny's support, and you referenced this briefly, is Russia's economic problems. Stagnating wages, reduced pensions, inflation, growing poverty. This is a very real problem, and some of the support for the protests has been driven by Russians being fed up with the economic situation. And it almost doesn't seem like the Kremlin knows exactly how to tackle this issue. What do you think about that from the Kremlin standpoint?
Well, my view may again disappoint our listeners and may be unpopular, but it's just my personal view, I would stress. But when Putin always, Putin always remind people about grim 90s, speaking for his loyal audience. And he's not, I think, that much wrong when he says that the only thing he don't want is not to return Russia into those grim 90s. Because, yes, you are right, economic situation is not so good, though oil prices are now quite high and maybe much higher in upcoming year if the pandemic ends, for example. And we know that this is the main source of income for Russian government. Economic situation is not good, but even now, average salaries in Russian cities are much, much bigger than they were back then in 90s. I remember very well how in 90s our family of four could have lived for like $50 a month. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, even people in rural Russia receive like $300, $500, which may sound very little for people who don't know the situations. But if you compare it with what they had, Yes, that's why Putin also always mentioning it. The only thing I would be worried if I was Putin is the transit of power. It's plausible to say he is going to rule Russia until health allows him. Like Soviet leaders did, but when such a huge power is consolidated in one's hand, it's always very hard to find a proper successor. So this is the real problem. And as for economic situation, yes, it will stagnate, it will worse, the oil prices will drop, it will be a little bit better if oil prices will go higher. Mm-hmm. As we all remember, the Soviet Union collapsed when the oil prices fell nearly like to nothing, and we don't have anything close to that now.
Yes, in addition to the Duma elections coming up this fall, of course, 2024 is the next sort of pivotal political moment in Kremlin thinking. That's the time when Putin's current term is supposed to end. And as you referenced, we don't really have any clear indication what's going to happen after 2024, if Putin is going to stay or if he's going to find a successor.
I'm pretty sure he's going to stay, but it all depends on his health condition. Mm-hmm. And as for Navalny, I expect him being sentenced like Khodorkovsky for 10, 15 years for this money fraud case. And then I think government will trade release conditions with him like Putin did with Khodorkovsky. And the only thing Putin can propose to Navalny for release is leaving Russia. That's for me obvious.
Well, suffice to say, I think we're entering a volatile period in Russian politics and the Putin presidency, and it might be more bulldogs fighting under the carpet in the near future. But, Mark, спасибо большое. Thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, we'll be back next Monday for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out for Steve Gutterman's Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.